Welcome to this session, which is on In the Vineyard, Water and Irrigation. My name is James Streeter. I'm the chair of the Sustainable Wine Roundtable. And I'd just like to give a brief intro to this session, and then I will introduce our panel. So climate change and water are often talked about in the same sentence, and certainly to farmers, water is absolutely paramount. The amount of water required to make a bottle of wine, it really, of course, varies. But I've seen one estimate which says that it's about 870 litres of water per litre of wine. Now, of course, the majority of that is going to be in the vineyard and coming from precipitation. Another estimate is that it takes 700 millimetres of precipitation to make mature ripe grapes. So in some wine-growing areas, the wine actually wouldn't exist without irrigation, whilst in others it's actually not permitted. So it's a varying landscape across the wine world. But, you know, when and how we access and manage a water source is vitally important. And, you know, should we consider changing our vineyards, adapting our species, our practices for a lower water regime? So these are just a couple of the issues. And here to unpick this fascinating subject, I'm joined by Cecilia Acosta, who's the agricultural manager with Grupo Avinia from Argentina. She's an agricultural engineer and head of R&D. And prior to that, she was in charge of managing 372 hectares of organic vineyards in Argentina. So welcome, Cecilia. Also joined by Dudley Brown, who is joining us from South Australia, the owner and viticulturalist at Inkwell Wines. Dudley, like some of his ancestors, was transported to Australia from North America by his then wife, who wanted to own a vineyard. And he discovered that he loved being a farmer, and she discovered that she didn't want to own a vineyard. So they parted ways, but more recently, it was the subject of sustainability that brought him together with his current wife. And I know sustainability is a huge passion of Dudley's. So welcome, Dudley. Alvaro, Alvaro Lopez, winemaker from Real Campanha Velha in Portugal. This winery has been in existence since 1756. And for the past 26 years of that time, Alvaro has been an agronomist there. So welcome, Alvaro. And finally, Sushma Shankar, co-founder and COO of Deep Planet from the UK. Sushma is a software engineer who co-created Deep Planet whilst doing her MBA at Oxford University. And Deep Planet combine remote sensing, such as satellite imagery, with ground truthing to help their wine industry clients in a number of ways, including assessing soil moisture. So welcome, Sushma. A couple of housekeeping things. As Tom has been stressing throughout the workshop so far, please keep your microphones on mute unless we do have time for questions at the end. It's actually quite a short session. It's just half an hour, so we're going to try and stay very focused. Please write your questions in the chat, and also panelists, when you're not speaking or if you're remarkably multi-talented, please feel free to answer any questions that come up in the chat. So, Cecilia, can you kick us off, please? Please, you know, start by giving a brief introduction to Grupo Avinia and your role, but really then tell us about managing soil moisture in vineyards in water-stressed Argentina.
Okay, thank you, James, for the introduction, and I hope all of you were very good. In Grupo Avinia, as James said, we are organic producer. We are the biggest organic wine company in Argentina in terms of certified organic vineyard. We have 372 hectares of vineyard, 322 are in Mendoza, and 50 in Patagonia. By 2025, we are going to double our vineyard, all of them with organic certification, and this plan is already going. We are so happy for that. And in Grupo Avinea, we work under organic, sustainable, and fair trade certification. In Argentina, almost 80% of the wine region are located at the foot of the Andes, where the weather is continental. That is why we need to irrigate our vineyard. And in Mendoza, where are our two main facilities, we have many policies related with water management. But in Grupo Avinea, we focus on the efficient of use water. All of our vineyards have drip irrigation system. During the season, we monitor the soil moisture with sensors that we put in different depth, depend on where are the 60% of the growing roots. We check that root growth every winter to know where the water should go. Also, during growing season, after veraison, we check the water needed by the plant with pressure chamber also. This practice helps us too much during the green season and also during the heat waves that were very often the last season. We are making nowadays researching related with cover crop. We are looking for cover crop that are resistant on drought, resistant in frost, and also receded naturally. The first result give us that the spontaneous and also the native herbs are growing very good in those characteristics. Also, we are researching with hosts that go underground our soil, and we are checking how we can manage with our type of water. With the new plantation, we are researching we want to develop different rootstock that are resistant of drought and also give us vigorous in our plants.
Thank you, Cecilia. That's great. So you've covered a lot of areas there about water balance, about different irrigation methods, and also research into rootstock. If we've got time, I'd like to come back to you on that. But I'm going to hand over now to Dudley. Dudley, you explained to me when we spoke previously that you have a negative water balance from the natural precipitation. And you have to irrigate. Really keen to hear about how you do that and also about the interesting source of water that you use for irrigation in McLaren Vale.
Yeah, well, I mean, we're in a warm climate and about 80 meters above sea level, about 3 kilometers from the ocean. And we have typically 550 millimeters of rain a year. And at least in this area, it's sort of that 700, 750 milliliters of precipitation annually that's necessary. So because of the deficit, we need to irrigate. Historically, what you do is you just sort of wait till the water ran out of the soil in December, turn on the water, and get you through vintage in March or something. But starting in about 2007 or 8, it became very clear that things were different and they were changing and they were not predictable. And we started making, I had already done it, but we have 8 moisture monitors on 12 hectares because we have, we go all the way from dark clays to sand dunes just on our property across 2 geologies that are 1.5 million years apart. So incredibly diverse, small area. The source of the water is reclaimed water. So it comes from the suburbs over the hill. It was a city of about, suburb of, 80 or 100,000 people, and it generates about 10 gigaliters a year of secondary water that's been had primary treatment, which has gotten much better over the years. It is then piped down to McLarenville, where it's about 60% of the region's needs. And I think it's around 6 gigaliters of usage, which equates to about 60% of the usage of the region.
That's great. And what about the other 40%? Where do you draw that water from?
To be honest with you, I think reclaim's gotten a little bit higher than that. It's probably closer to 70 now. The next sort of 20 to 30% is from a managed basin. So it's the first basin that was proclaimed, meaning it was regulated in Australia. 25, 28 years ago now. And it limits water extraction in areas where the aquifer is not stressed to about 1.1 megaliter per hectare for people who had existing extraction rights.
And has that, I'm curious to know how the overall sort of trend, if you like, in water consumption versus the recharge in the area. So your water sources, what direction is that moving? Is that all progressing nicely? So,
It is very closely studied. There's actually a national center studying it, just because it's the region in Australia with the most data, because we proclaimed this basin first and we've got all these other things going on. In some cases, the basin is recharging slowly. We're undoing, a lot of damage. And on one hand, on the other hand, there are pockets of the basin that are stressed. And the principal difficulty is not everyone is metered, just growers who have licenses to extract water. So everybody else, because it's a rural area, has what they call a stock and domestic license, which means they can sort of take as much as they want. And, got a couple cows, got this or that or the other thing. And there's probably some bad behavior there where those people need to be metered. But within the basin itself, if you take too much water out of the basin without, some sort of arrangement in place, very strict arrangement, you can get prosecuted or fined very heavily.
Okay. And presumably the basin management is in the context of a changing climate. So is it getting drier there? Or?
Well, originally the basin management was really just about not destroying the basin. It had nothing to do with climate change. We were just starting to talk about it when it came into being. But, but it's an interesting point because, water doesn't get back to the aquifer unless it penetrates the first, 50 centimeters very quickly with more extreme events being the norm. We're still getting the same amount of rain, but it's happening in fewer events. If you don't have soils that can absorb enormous amounts of water quickly, that's a real long-term problem for the basin. So it's a good question.
And that leads me on. Thank you, Daddy. That leads me on to Alvaro. You have in the Douro Valley there a particularly challenging physical environment that you have to work within. Please tell us a little bit about your vineyard and your setting in the Douro Valley.
As you know, I don't speak fluent English. Please, I'm so sorry. I will do some mistakes. But I think the essential, maybe I can translate you with a very clear information. So I think before talking about irrigations and use water in the vineyard, I think it's very important to make one sample descriptions about the Douro region, because sometimes people never don't know what is that region. So Douro Valley is a wine region. Is situated in the north of Portugal with a global area with 250,000 hectares. but the vineyards represent just 18%. So just 45,000 hectares, it's vineyards. The vineyards are mostly on the mountain slopes. So our viticulture is therefore very difficult because the vineyards are very, very steep. And I think this characteristic, it's what define the base of the region, is a flat or steep. And I think yesterday I told you before, to me, 90% of the region rule are flat and everything, it's easy. You can harvest in the night with a machine. Here is do it by hand. Everything is difficult and very, very expensive, we know here. It is a very also heterogeneous region with the different geographics and the different climates and soils are mostly from the shale, shale rock, but with the different compositions. This is very, 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 very important. The region has an oval configuration, begins at 50 kilometers from the coast, but and ends in the near to Spain. So different climates. It surrenders with the mountains, and that mountains protect the region from the humidity of the Atlantic and the hot, dry Spanish winds. So it's a climate protection. The climate is mostly Mediterranean, but we are areas further west. It is a little different. It's more Atlantic. When you talk about Atlantic, it's less warm and more humidity. And the areas close to Spain, it's a climate a little bit continental, is warmer and less precipitation. Considerable percentage of our vineyards are still old and the traditionals with a complex mix of the varieties. So old vines, traditional vines, it's impossible to input any machine, just do it by hand. And we use the Douro, is very old region, you know, and has more than 120 different varieties. Mostly of these varieties are native varieties. The region has grown over in the last three centuries to produce a port wine. And this is very important because we talk about water and irrigation, okay? At the moment, the port wine represent, I think, more than 65%. It's very important to us, the port wine. The Douro practices a very difficult and expensive viticulture. The productions costs are very high because the average production is very low and we need a lot of the people in the vineyards to do the work. To understand better, in the old vineyards, traditional vineyards, I need 600 hours, the people in 1 hectare, and that old vines give me just 3 between 4,000 kilos. And when you talk about vintage port or top quality, the rule what I use it is, I need 3 plants of the vines to produce 1 bottle. The natural conditions is very, very specific and thin the profile and also the longevity of the vines. The Mediterranean climate where we are is annual precipitation 650 millimeters. Depends, it's more or less, depends the distributions along the year. But 80% is between November and May. Only 20% in the last months of the grapes maturation cycle. So it's very important, you know. So it's, and that the natural conditions define to complete all our conditions. The average annual temperature is 16.7 degrees Celsius. And the average temperature from the April between September is close to 23 degrees Celsius. In the area close to the Douro River at the low altitude or medium altitude, we have a few days of the frost, maybe less than 25 days between December and February. And in the summertime, we have a few days with a very high temperature between 40 and 45 degrees Celsius with a few weeks, but without rain. It's very stress season. We talk about July and sometimes August. Last year, I had 47 degrees Celsius in 17 July. Now, the schist, the soil, it's made a schist soil, have a low organic matter, sometimes 0.2, 0.5. When I have 1% material organic, I think to us is a very, very rich soil, but usually it's 0.2, 0.5. The soil, the schist, has many minerals, but the minerals are not immediately available for the plants. It has a slow flow. It's slowly. It's a rich soil, but that richness, that richness is not available in the right moment. The shale rock is permeable and normally not hard, and oxygen and water can penetrate it very, very deep. And this is very important because we have conditions for growing the microorganisms and the system root very deep. Sometimes I can see roots of the vines, but in all the plants at 5, 7, 10 meters deep. The combination of these natural conditions and the use of the native varieties is the secret of the making a good wines, or with we consider a good and high quality, but mostly of the great, great, great longevity. So, Quinta das Carvalhas, where we are in this moment, is situated in the geographic center of the Douro Valley. It has a Mediterranean climate. 6 hectares are traditional vineyards. In the 60 hectares, I have 38 old age, over 100 years, with a 45 complex mix of the varieties. In the last 20 years, we have planted more than 60 hectares of the new vineyards. So, to talk about the irrigations, I only speak about my experience, my personal experience and the results what I had in the last 20 years. The plant a new vineyards in our conditions, when we decided to plant the new vineyards, we need to pay 50,000 with the better situations to 90,000 euros per hectare. If I need to rebuild the walls, we need to pay 150 euros per meter square. So it's very expensive. And the system irrigation represents just 5%. So I think that the system irrigations we can use for water should be done in the first two, in the maximum 3 years, to guarantee what the successful planting close to 100%. This is what I think.
So, Amaro, sorry to interrupt. I just want to sort of like recapture what you're saying, because it's a really interesting scenario. Just because of a time constraint here. But if I get what you're saying is that the complexity of your geography and where your vineyard is, the soil type, the climate, mean that actually irrigation is possible, but it's challenging and it's significant logistics and costs that it adds to your viticulture. If you could just give me sort of, you know, another 15 seconds just to wrap up, because I do would like to get to Sushma.
Because I want to finish my conclusion. So just my...
Please go for it. Just nice, okay. And quickly for us. Thank you.
What I think is, in this moment, is a challenge in this moment. What do you think? Our decision in the vineyards will be determined in the next 20, 50 years. We know. Water is good. I think is good when the risk of survival of the vineyards. We talk about the vineyards in my region close to the Spain, in the Douro Superior. When the risk to survive vineyards and to keep some quantity, I agree we need to use water. But here in my conditions, to use water to me, maybe it's not correct, because first time before we need to understand what we do to avoid water. For example, the people in the last 20 years used the rock stock more productive, more vigor. We change our system pruning with a cordon. We input more canopy. We put more leaves. We put more breathe. And of course, with mechanization, we reduce our density, 8,000 plants to 3,000 plants. And the people want one plant to produce like three plants. It's impossible. So the only chances to give more productions is to put more birds per area. In my case here with the steep conditions, I think we need to look at the old vineyards, reduce the number of the birds per plant, change the system pruning by a Goyo with a 6, 7, 5 birds per plant, reduce the canopy, use more material organic, control more the grass in the vineyards, the cover green to promote more structure in the vineyards. Maybe you don't depend 100% to the water. And if we define to produce very high quality, because we cannot produce more, our resources is very limited. So in the last two, three months in the maturation cycle, we have just sometimes 45, 50 millimeters in 2 months. It's of course, it's very extreme.
Alvaro, thank you for that. And I think that's a really, really great point. So it's not just about access to the water, sourcing the water and distributing it. It's about more holistic management, number of buds, pruning, leaf, shade, organic matter in the soil. I think that's terrific. Thank you so much for that.
Of course, the water is also for everything.
We will. I've been given permission by our fine timekeeper, Tom, to push into the break a little bit. So we've got another 5 minutes or so. So finally, Sushma, perhaps you could tell us a little bit about Deep Planet and the services that you're providing to the wine industry.
Thanks, James. It's really interesting to hear all the panelists. Thanks for having me here. I'm the co-founder of Deep Planet, as you mentioned. We are an agri-tech company. We came out of Oxford about 5 years ago. And what we do is use a more database approach to helping winemakers and growers to solve the problems around water and sustainability. So we use satellite imagery or remote sensing and AI to address some of these problems. So we really started the company to help solve the water crisis in this industry when one of the largest winemakers approached us with soil moisture sensor data and really not being able to do much with the sensor data in terms of optimizing the irrigation or reducing the cost. And we were quite pulled into how much climate change is already affecting this industry and how we can use data to better help improve practices around water and irrigation management. So for the past 5 years, we've worked with over 300 wine growers globally, not only in areas of sustainability, but also in improving productivity by understanding when and where to harvest per block, per variety. So we've looked at over hundreds of varieties and across different regions and how we can reduce costs there, right? But on the sustainability end, there are a few key things which we are monitoring and are being asked for from the growers around the world. So we help monitor soil health, one of the interesting areas or areas of interest remotely, right? And we help regularly monitor the soil in terms of soil carbon, nutrients such as nitrogen, potassium, phosphorus, helping avoid any soil sampling costs. But also it gives a very easy to access tool to growers to understand, you know, kind of at the click of a button, really, to say how the carbon has been changing. And as Alvaro was mentioning, it hasn't changed significantly, but it does save the cost of sampling, especially across larger vineyards, and especially if you're trying to do things more remotely. And obviously, this plays a very important role in healthy soils and better water retention. In the area of irrigation, we're looking at how data can help improve ground practices. So one of the initial work that we've done is, or with some of our customers, is using soil moisture sensor data and interpolating these data between the sensors to help assess how the soil moisture levels are changing throughout the field, throughout the farm, and to a depth of a meter and a half. So we're able to predict what would happen in the next 2 weeks, and basically provide a 3D visual or data to help dynamic irrigation scheduling and helping optimize, you know, where to water and, you know, which parts not to water. And we've seen some significant improvement with ground practices for the farmers there. And for those, quite a few of farmers come to us with no sensors, right? And for that, we have developed an evapotranspiration prediction tool, especially if you don't have weather stations or if you don't have sensors on the ground. They're able to predict this to help you make those irrigation and crop management practices. Another point I'd like to talk about is on a very basic level, we help detect irrigation water leaks. And again, all of this can be done remotely, especially if you have larger vineyards where you're trying to see how the crop is changing, which a lot of people look at NDVI and NWI, but we're able to assess when there is a leakage and notify the farmers immediately when it happens. I'm trying to keep up with the time here. And lastly, we're working with some of the Portuguese growers on developing technology which can help predict water application to achieve, you know, to achieve the expected BOMI and the Brix levels. So this is quite an interesting approach. We're looking at soil moisture sensor data overlaid with irrigation scheduling data, and overlay that with the BOMI and the Brix BOMI of the Brix values, and to see what sugar levels can be achieved with certain amount of water application. So it's quite an interesting area, and we're kind of getting pulled into it more and more often, and trying to address the problem of water or optimizing water usage by looking at these different aspects. Obviously, soil, crop management practices, canopy, cover crops, all of these are related. So we're building in tools to kind of look at this more in a holistic way than just looking at it from a kind of a data point of view.
So Sushma, thank you so much for that. And I've seen that you've put your contact email in the chat. So I think that's probably best if anybody's interested, reach out directly to Sushma. Look, one last question quickly for Dudley and for Cecilia. I'm interested in this point about adaptation in the vineyard to a sort of a lower water environment, and work with Cecilia, you mentioned rootstocks. Are either of you, are you considering changing rootstocks or your varietals in response to water?
Yes.
Yeah, perhaps quickly first, just a very quick wrap up.
Yes, in the new plantation, we are thinking about that because, we in Argentina, we have several heat waves during the season, and also not for water and also for salinity, because we need to irrigate. Sometimes our water contain salt, and that is why we put focus in water and also in the salt that maybe can give the vines more stressful. We are so focused looking for a new rootstock, looking for a new in some research that everybody are made it. And I think we are going to have new rootstock so soon.
Great, thank you for that. We could talk a lot more about that quickly. Dudley, is that something that you're considering or have worked with?
Yeah, no, we've actually been aggressively changing our varietal mix over the last 10 years, because Australia's a bit of a canary in the coal mine for climate change and crazy weather. So what that means in practice is we're moving to varieties like Arinto and Griot from Sicily and Tariga, things like that, that are much more adapted to hot and dry conditions. Your other point, I think, you know, the most obvious thing in irrigation, when we talk about irrigation, is keeping the water that we get from the heavens is the most important thing. You know, it's like that's free and it's available. The trick is to be able to store it. And so I appreciate when He's talking about schist soils and things like that. It, you know, heavy rainfall maybe doesn't get in, but slow rainfall, you know, can get immense amounts in. So it's a, you know, if you don't have great water infiltration rates, you really need to look at the rest of your practices to, you know, get that buffer of safety with your water resources.
That's a great way to conclude our discussion, Dudley. Thank you for that, and thank you to all of the panel. Really appreciate your insights here. Thank you all.